Well, earlier this week, I was talking to my sister on the phone. She is 8.5 years younger than me and lives in Melbourne with her husband and her children. And as I was chatting to her, she was in the car and I was in the car. That's when we usually talk. But my 10-year-old nephew, my favourite 10-year-old nephew, because he's my only one, was also in the car, my only 10-year-old nephew. I've got other nephews, but I tell him that he's my favourite 10-year-old. But part of our conversation started to move towards our nephew's schoolwork. And he was telling me that he had to write a persuasive text and that he had to do it before the end of term. I did think to myself, I'm not sure when I was 10 that I knew what a persuasive text was. But anyway, this has to be finished before the end of term. And I said to him, how long have you got of school left to go? And he told me they go to a Christian school, him and his brother, so it is a bit shorter than government schools. And he said, and I've got to have it typed up and everything. And I said to him, well, Jack, here's the thing. I said, why don't you write it, take a photo of it and send it to me, your favourite auntie, and I'll type it up for you and I'll send it back. But I said, I need you to do something for me if I'm going to do that for you. And he said, what do I need to do? And I said, well, is there any chance that you could finish my sermon for Sunday? Now, there was some silence on the phone until my sister and I had to clarify with him what the sermon was. And I said, you know, it's when I get up in church to talk. I said, I just need someone to finish putting it together. He said, okay. I said, well, the topic is about doing good. Well, this is what Jack asked me to tell you all today. He said, just tell them to do good. I said, Jack, I might need something more than that. What else have you got? He said, do more good. I said, okay. Jack, I still need more. So he said, do even more good. Well, we could pack it up now, you know. Hebrews 13 said to do good. Jack Franks, 10-year-old, says to do good, do more good and do even more good. I think that he's actually onto something as we conclude our series this morning on believe in good. I am going to expand a little bit more than Jack did. We heard earlier from the book of Hebrews just a few moments ago from Margaret, and it's quite an interesting book in the Bible. And one theologian actually describes it as the epistle to the Hebrews is in many respects the riddle of the New Testament. It's interesting that we're going to look at a riddle this morning. When it was written, to whom it was written, and by who it was written, are questions that are still debated today. And actually, if you do some research, you'll discover that it was not until the 4th century that it was definitely accepted as a New Testament book. But what many people, in fact, most people agree upon is that it was written to a group of first century Christians who were at risk of giving up on their faith and reverting to their old ways of living because they were facing persecution for their beliefs. But the writer of Hebrews reminds the people that he was writing to of three things. The first one was who Jesus is. And right at the commencement in Hebrews 1 verse 3, we read, "The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word." After he, that is Jesus, had provided purification for sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty in heaven. Jesus is the Son of God, and now he sits at the right hand of his Father in heaven. The second thing that the writer reminds us of is of the redeeming work of Jesus. And it says in Hebrews 7 verse 27, Unlike the other high priests, he, again that's Jesus, does not need to offer sacrifices day after day, first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once and for all when he offered himself. It was different to the priests of the Old Testament times. Jesus offered himself as a sacrifice, and that's all that was needed. And then the third thing that the writer of Hebrews says is actually about what our response to these things should be. And he encourages the Christians to whom he was writing to persevere in their faith. He says in Hebrews 10, "Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promised is faithful." Hold on to the hope, persevere, don't give up. This may mean enduring hardship, strengthening ourselves, perhaps living in peace, being holy, being thankful, worshipping God in a way that is acceptable to him. So many ways that we can persevere in our faith. And then we get to the concluding words of chapter 13 that we heard, and in particular, these 16 verses, as Margaret said, give us some excellent advice to the way of living. We're told to be loving, to be pure, to be content, to be loyal, bold, worshipful, and to do good. Obviously very relevant for the people of the day, but still very relevant for us in today's society. And this key verse in this passage says, "And do not forget to do good and share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." Well, doing good is an important aspect of the Christian faith, and this command from Hebrews is applicable for all Christians and for all of us. It could suggest that perhaps there are times that we neglect to do good, which is why the reminder is given. Perhaps we sometimes forget to share with others. But for many of us, this is not intentional. It's just that we get caught up in the busyness of our own lives, the busyness of our families. Sometimes we can become oblivious to the needs of others. Not intentional, but it can happen to all of us, myself included. You know, Jesus expected the disciples to do good works. He taught this and he modeled this to everybody who he interacted with when he walked this earth as a man. When I was about 16 years old, I attended a Salvation Army music camp in Melbourne. And it was actually at this camp, I think, where I made some very significant decisions in who I wanted to be. And it was really important in my development and my discipleship as a young Christian. Now, this didn't have anything to do with my amazing timbrel playing skills. You know, I played the timbrel like a lot of young people in the Salvation Army, or how amazing I was singing in the massed vocal choir. But actually, the biggest impact from this particular camp was the Bible study. And I can still picture where we would gather each afternoon at the camp in Melbourne, and we would sit, we were actually sitting on the grass outside to study Matthew 25. Which some of you may know straight away, is titled "The Sheep and the Goats." Words of Jesus, where he speaks about separating the sheep and the goats, or perhaps separating people into two groups. One group served others, giving them water, food, an invitation, visiting them in prison, looking after them, while the other group did not. Now, there's two chapters in Matthew's Gospel, chapters 24 and 25, which are actually titled Signs of the End of the Age. And lots of people find them quite confronting as it talks about condemnation and judgment. But as a 16-year-old at that camp, I actually didn't pick up on the negativity, perhaps the way that it was so confronting for some of my peers. But rather, I think it was then and there that I decided that this is how I wanted to live. That I wanted to be a person who did good, believing that when I was loving and serving others, that it was and still is as if I'm doing it for Jesus himself. There are two verses in Matthew 25 that spoke to me then and I think are still quite pivotal for me these days. Verse 40 says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." But then on the flip side, verse 45 says, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me." The words of Jesus. Jesus takes the way we treat others seriously and personally. Being good towards others is a means of serving Jesus himself. We're not just serving the person in front of us. Early Christians were very much influenced by this practical aspect of Jesus' teaching. And it was not only Jesus who taught and reminded others that this was a good way to live. The Apostle Paul, when writing to the Christians in Galatia, said this, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers." These words come from a passage in the New International Version that's titled Doing Good to All. This passage comes right after Paul's teaching on the fruit of the Spirit, where he talks about being filled with love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. Not too different from the passage that we just read from Hebrews 13, where we were encouraged to be loving, pure, loyal, and worshipful. And I don't believe for one moment that it's a coincidence that following both of these teachings on who we should be comes the instruction to do good and to not give up doing good. Because can we do good if we are not filled with the fruit and the Holy Spirit? On Friday, a few of us from Parramatta attended the funeral of Margaret Shea, a lady who had helped in English conversation groups here for over 15 years. And I sat next to Ian Martin at the service, and it was fascinating to hear of all the things that this woman had achieved in her life. It was a life well lived. And I would say it was a life lived to the max, if you want to use that language. And inside the order of service were some well-known words from John Wesley that say this: "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. Now, I have read these words numerous times over my life, and I found it quite interesting, although I would probably say not coincidental, that they were inside the order of service. Because, to be honest, I'd read them in preparation for today, and I had decided to omit them because it truly sounds exhausting to live like that. And if you knew Margaret Chia, and Ian and others can probably attest to this, she was always on the go doing so many amazing good things. And I just thought, all the good, all the time, all the ways, all the, this is full on. I don't know actually if this is sustainable. Doesn't mean I don't want to do good, but can I do it all the time? In all the ways, forever. That's a lot of good. And I think, how do we do good and be practical and sensible about it? Well, on Thursday, I went up and down James Roos Drive way too many times, 6 times in total, I think. Never for my own agenda, but for my family. On the first trip, I noticed a new billboard that is above the road right near the Rose Hill Racecourse. And it's changed recently and they're no longer advertising horse racing, but they're advertising NIB. And this is the billboard that is now up across James Roos Drive. Definitely good, potentially amazing. Now, on my first trip down James Roos Drive, I was taking Dave to the airport as a good wife, and I was the passenger in the car because he doesn't like my driving. And I said, NIB, I said, what, NIB, what's NIB? And I said, is NIB private health insurance? And I said to Dave, what does that mean? It's definitely good, but it's potentially amazing. I said, why don't they just make it amazing from the beginning? I'm not sure that this is what they were trying to communicate to their new potential customers, but it got me thinking that maybe I should contact them and tell them just to make their insurance amazing from the beginning, and then they wouldn't have to advertise it as being definitely good, potentially amazing, and they could save themselves a whole lot of money. But by the next time I drove down there, I had Josiah in the car, and I was driving this time. And I looked at it again and I said to him, can you take a photo of that sign for me because I want to use it on Sunday in my sermon? And I think he thought that I was completely crazy. But it got me thinking, what if your good, what if our good could potentially be amazing? I want to share one more story with you. About 10 years ago, I had some postcards made, this size, that had quotes and sayings on it that I on them that I had got from the internet. There were 20 different ones, and I would put them up in my office and they would rotate through. And while I did love all of them, this one that's going to come up on the screen was my favourite, and I had to go digging through something in our study at home to find it. And it's the words of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and I have actually verified, because you know a lot of quotes you find on the internet are not necessarily true, but he apparently did say this in one of his sermons, and he says this, do your little bit of good where you are. It's those bits of good put together that overwhelm the world. And I wondered, maybe this is what the scripture's trying to tell us. Do your little bit of good where you are. You know, I think every day this week I've possibly had the opportunity to do good. I'm not sure I've always embraced it or jumped at it, if I'm completely honest. But around me, every day, there are opportunities to do good. Sometimes it's just a little bit of good, but it's definitely good. But I believe that Archbishop Tutu tells us how it could potentially be amazing. Because if we put all the bits of good together, we can overcome the world. The darkness in the world, I believe, can be overcome by all of our bits of good. Imagine if everyone who is here today did their bit of good where they are, where we are, where I am. But let's go further. Imagine if everybody in our country, even in the world who professes to be a Christian, did their little bit of good wherever they are too. Imagine if we didn't use the excuses, which I am also guilty of being too busy or too tired or too old or too young or too over people to do our good. Imagine the potential if we all did our bit of good. How amazing would it be to overcome the darkness in the world and to be able to shine God's light even brighter. Hebrews reminds us that Jesus, the Son of God, came to earth both as man and God. He sacrificed himself once and for all, not because of anything that he had done, but because of our sins. And our response is that we are to hold unswervingly to the hope that we have in him. And we can do this because our God is faithful. But that's not the end. The concluding exhortations say that we ought to be loving, be pure, be content, be loyal, be bold, be worshipful, and do good. Why? Because doing good and sharing with others is a form of worshipping God. We worship not just with our lips, but with our actions. And in doing good, we are being the hands and the feet of Jesus in this world who so desperately needs to see the light. We extend his love and his compassion towards others in the hope that we can overcome and overwhelm the world. Do your little bit of good where you are, because it's those bits of good put together that overwhelm the world.